is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
Well, there you have it. Run a little bit behind there, sorry about that. Had to get a couple of things done, following up on a couple stories for you here. So what are your thoughts today on this free-for-all Friday? 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966, the number to call. This hour of the Steve Gruber Show brought to you by the Michigan 529 programs, making sure your kids and grandkids get the education they need. To learn more, go to savewithmi529.com. That's save with mi529.com. That is the place to go. And we do it. We just think it's a great thing, you know, for our kids, and probably is for you as well. Now, if you didn't hear this yesterday, John Boehner, I didn't think John Boehner had it in him. Really didn't. Didn't think John Boehner had it in him. But somehow, somehow, he reached down deep, and he pulled one out because he was asked about Ted Cruz. What do you think about Ted Cruz? Would you vote for Ted Cruz? Ted Cruz a good guy, or what do you think of him? Well, here's what John Boehner thinks about Ted Cruz. It's clip 9. Go.
So how about some of your opinions on some of the other people running for the highest office? How about Ted Cruz?
Lucifer in the flesh. Washington, I have as many Democrat friends as I have Republican friends, and I get along with everybody. But I have never worked with a more miserable son of a over my dead body, will you be president?
Over my dead body, will he be president? That miserable, well, you heard him. And then, of course, old Ted Cruz, he got involved with the conversation. He didn't care for it much either. And he responded and compared John Boehner to Donald Trump. Go figure. It's clip 4. Go.
John Boehner had some interesting comments last night. He actually didn't abbreviate what he said. He was a little bit more expressive. He allowed his inner Trump to come out. When John Boehner calls me Lucifer, he's not directing that at me. He's directing that at you. What Boehner is angry with me for is not anything I've ever said to him. I haven't said much of anything. What Boehner is angry with me for is standing with the American people. What Boehner is angry with is the American people holding him accountable. That's what the anger is, because the corrupt system that Boehner and Hillary have been enmeshed with for years, funded by Donald Trump. Donald's writing checks to Boehner, he's writing checks to Hillary. He's funding the corrupt system. It is unaccountable to the people.
Is that what it is? Well, there's a lot of truth to that. You know, I give him that. Everybody's unaccountable. Republicans, that's what we were talking about here earlier. Over the last 20 years, they've let us all down, have they not? They have let us all down. We say we want a secure border, we get ignored. We say we want lower taxes, we get ignored. We say it's time to put America first, we get ignored. Let me give you another example. I started talking about this earlier, but let me give you another example from the Washington Examiner. The U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency in 2015 decided to not deport, but rather release into the general public, onto you and I, nearly 20,000 illegal aliens with serious criminal records, including 208 convicted of murder. Nearly 1,000 convicted of serious sex crimes. More than 12,300 drunk drivers. All released back into America's cities and villages. They've been released into virtually every state, every city. Nearly 1,000 for sure confirmed here in Michigan. Yeah, that's what's going on. They're not even enforcing the laws. The criminals are just released onto the streets. Murderers. Sexual predators. And so when Donald Trump said that last year in June and he was roundly and soundly attacked and denigrated for saying that there are rapists and murderers coming from Mexico, well, apparently there are rapists and murderers coming from Mexico. Meanwhile, last night at a Donald Trump rally in California, hundreds of demonstrators waving Mexican flags smashed up a police squad car, beat up a couple of Donald Trump supporters, bloodied them, scuffled with riot police. 24 were arrested, waving Mexican flags while Trump supporters, one here, I mean, he just had the tar beaten out of him. He looks like he just got beaten into the pavement in some of the pictures here. Head injuries. Other Trump supporters. You know, I mean, several. Bloody noses and stitches. Is this what America is? We support this presidential candidate so those waving the Mexican flag can attack them and beat them? The signs dump the Trump and beat the tar out of people? Something's wrong with that picture, don't you think? It's 14 after Free For All Friday on the Steve Gruber Show.
The Steve Gruber Show. American values with Midwestern common sense.
All righty. Hey, you know, it's Free For All Friday. You can call anytime. 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. Whatever is on your mind, we can talk about it here. It's an open forum. This is not a safe space. It's where people actually have conversations. Joseph Castleberry, our next guest, president of Northwest University and author of The New Pilgrims, How Immigrants Are Renewing America's Faith and Values, and What the 2016 Contenders Can Learn from Eisenhower and Reagan. Joseph Castleberry, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Steve. Thanks.
Well, tell me about this book, first of all, and your premise.
Well, the book is aimed at a situation in which immigrants are taking it on the chin in a major way in media today. You know, there's an old saying, if it bleeds, it leads. And the media is telling the immigrant story through the worst cases in our society. In fact, the great majority of immigrants are making a terrific impact on America. It starts with their spiritual impact. 75% of immigrants to the United States are Christians, and a huge percentage of immigrants are very devout believers in God, and they're having an impact on American religion. Native-born Americans are moving away from formal religious expression in a huge fashion in the last 8 years. Whereas immigrants are bringing back churches in a huge way.
You know, I'm not sure.
Thousands of them.
And I understand your point there, but I think one of the negative connotations we get of immigrants is the fact that we have all seen probably only a fraction of, you know, a southern border, a border that is, it's chaos. It's chaotic, people running back and forth. And so, unfortunately, what the news media focuses on for immigrants oftentimes are the drug cartels and the nonsense and the lawlessness that goes on at the American-Mexican border, and that is a large part of what we see, and that gives a certain impression. And maybe it's
right.
Maybe it's not fair, but it is honest as far as what's going on there, is it not?
No, it's not honest if you make the unusual the main story, and you don't tell the big story. You falsify things, and it harms people, and that's not the American way. We don't slander people, but yet immigrants are being slandered as a group. In our society in a great big way.
Well, I mean, you say, well, and I have to ask you this, Joseph Castleberry on the line with us. Unusual. I mean, we've had tens of thousands of illegals come across the southern border, which gets the most press. It's not unusual. In fact, I dare say it's commonplace. And then you read articles like the one I just had a moment ago, that ICE has released 19,700 plus convicted criminals of that are illegal aliens that have no standing to be here, more than 200 convicted murderers, nearly 1,000 sexual predators that are released back into society. And, of course, you hear the stories from time to time of illegals that are involved with drunk driving crashes or homicides and different things. I mean, the news media has to cover those things, do they not?
Well, they do. But, again, that is an insane policy. And we are desperately, desperately in need of some political leadership here. I mean, that's an insane policy.
Which one?
The Obama administration's policy of just letting everybody go.
Well, I agree with that. And what about sanctuary cities? I think that's I think that's insanity as well. I mean, how can you allow
I'm
people? Okay, so we get that part. Now let's identify with the folks that are contributing and making a positive impact on America. Because I don't want to spend the whole time in the negative either. Give me some examples, sir, of places that you think are should be talked about more that don't get the press they deserve.
Well, first, the religious thing. Second, the economic thing. Immigrants are amazing entrepreneurs. They always have been. When you come to this country with nothing, you've got to be pretty creative and you've got to work very hard if you're going to pull out of desperation. And immigrants come with new ideas and they start businesses 50% more likely than native-born Americans to start new businesses. And that's true all the way from Google and eBay at the top of the economy all the way down to the local taco stand. Immigrants are inveterate job creators. One estimate that came from research at the University of Virginia showed that immigrants create 1.2 jobs for every one job that they take. So, you know, people are worried about immigrants taking American jobs. Well, that does happen. But they also create jobs in America, and they create more than they take. That's not a story that's being widely reported, and it's an important one. You know, another thing is looking at immigrants as consumers.
I'm running those numbers in my head. So of the 12 million illegal aliens in the country today, you're telling me they created 18 million jobs?
You know, illegals create jobs, too. They're not as empowered as folks who come here illegally, obviously. I'm not making an argument just about illegals there, but about...
All right, well, let me ask you, how then? How does an illegal, somebody that comes to this country illegally, how do they create a job?
Well, you know, one of the things that they do here is they buy houses and they start working, and when they see opportunities, they start businesses, whether it's a home cleaning business or a construction business. It's amazing to me some of the things that folks who are here illegally are able to accomplish, but obviously they're dealing with a major handicap when they come here without legal status.
I'm still processing that and how I'm working my way through that. We're on the line this morning with Joseph Castleberry, president of Northwest University and author of The New Pilgrims, How Immigrants Are Renewing America's Faith and Values. But a lot of folks in this country today are you know, not enthralled with immigrants and folks coming here. I'll give you 15 seconds for the last word on why they should be, and then tell folks where they can find your book.
Well, we desperately need to reform our immigration laws to get rid of this situation of illegal immigration. Nobody likes illegal immigration, but the current laws are not adequate. We need to get very serious in Congress and straighten this thing out. We certainly need to do a better job of enforcing our laws once we have fixed them.
All right. Joseph Castleberry, interesting conversation. Greatly appreciate you stopping in today.
Hey, no problem.
There you have it. Joseph Castleberry, the president of Northwest University here on the program. The New Pilgrims. Yes, no, what do you think? 888-900-9966. Back in a moment.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
When the forest burns along the road, like God's eyes and my headlights,
It is Friday here in the program. You know, you hear about this a fair amount, the delicacy, the fragility of the grid, of the electrical grid, the fragility, the problems. You know, every time a storm goes through, how many people are without power? In a lot of places in the country, it's outdated. It's aged infrastructure that needs to be upgraded. And so while we're paying attention to transmission lines and so forth, and ways to make sure that when you flip the light switch, it works, other things may be more susceptible to problems. Things like cyber attacks. The Ukraine was under cyber attack recently, their electrical grid. The FBI and the Department of Homeland Security have been urging U.S. power companies to develop better protocols every day. And yet, we know, we see, we watch on the news attacks through cyberspace on computers in all sorts of places to get your personal information, to get your financial information. It's an endless barrage. Our next guest from International Business Times, a senior writer there, Eric Markowitz, to talk more about it. Eric, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So I assess the threat for me. How vulnerable are we?
Well, I think that, first of all, that depends a little bit on who you ask. I think if you ask the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security, they would say very. I think it's important to look at what happened in Ukraine because it's kind of a roadmap for what could happen here. So what happened there just after Christmas last year in 2015 was someone, they actually don't know who it was, gained access to a control tower that controlled power for about 225,000 people in western Ukraine, and very methodically, just, you know, sort of transformer by transformer, shut down all of the power to the region. And they did this really because they had access through just a username and a password. They got one of the employees to they essentially tricked one of the employees to giving that information over. And just using that information, they were able to shut down the system. And it was really a moment for other countries to take a look at their own systems to see where the vulnerabilities were. So your question was, how vulnerable? Well, I'd say very.
So, okay, because, I mean, here's the thing. We just had a situation right here in Lansing, Michigan right now, where the Board of Water and Light has been infiltrated by one of these viruses that demands payment, if you will, for them to give their information back. And this is going on right now. They're trying to fix this. So if it can happen at a utility like the Board of Water and Light in Lansing, Michigan, others are vulnerable as well, are they not? Ransomware, right. They call this. They call this ransomware, right, where they demand payment to get your information back.
Exactly. And, you know, the Ukrainian tech was different, but this happens all over the place. In fact, the example that you mentioned in Michigan happened in where I'm based right now in Los Angeles, where hackers got control of a hospital computer system and demanded the same thing. I think it was $30,000, and then they would release all the records, the hospital records. So that was ransomware, where it's a malware virus system. What's potentially even scarier than malware is just a hacker or hacker collective that just gains control of the entire system and may not even really want money. I mean, it could be looked at as even an act of terrorism if hackers gain control and shut down a system just for the purpose of creating chaos, not necessarily financial gain.
So, I mean, is it a game for some of these folks that do this sort of thing? I mean, is it if you can crack the system, you're cool with your geek buddies, or what is it? I mean, there's got to be some element of that, and then there's some element, there might be financial, some of it might be political, some of it might be, I don't know. What is the motivation for these folks?
Well, the one that you had mentioned, that's clearly financial. They were looking to make money off of this. It's a little less clear with a potential cyber attack on the grid, and I think that, frankly, the ambitions would be a bit more sinister than just something where they could make a quick buck or show off to their buddies, hey, look what we did. Because when you start thinking about how critical power and electricity is for the country and just how susceptible we are to really a potential disaster if we don't have access to electricity for more than just a couple of days. If you're thinking in terms of weeks or months of no access to electricity, it could very well be a very dangerous attack on the country.
Well, yeah. Let me explain something. If you went without your ATM for 2 or 3 days, if you went without your ATM for a week, or you couldn't access, you know, electricity at your home, and therefore your freezer went out, and so on and so forth, people that can't access their money, the basic things like their cell phones don't work because there's no power to the cell tower. I mean, it would be complete chaos. Think about the millennials alone, unable to use their iPhones.
A total disaster in that case.
Total meltdown.
Exactly. Well, I think that this is exactly what the Department of Homeland Security and FBI are trying to, in a way, go on this campaign, trying to get power companies more aware of how susceptible their own systems may be and get them to improve their security procedures. So same way that the different regulatory bodies are urging banks to beef up their security systems and hospitals, it's the same thing with electricity companies now.
So what can be done? I mean, what can we really do to protect ourselves long term? I mean, really, because it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, Eric, we're on the line with Eric Markowitz from International Business Times. Not only do the security systems get more sophisticated every day, but so do the hackers. Again, to me, for some of it seems like it's a game to see how well they can do to beat the system, the newest, latest, greatest security system, and we beat it. Bragging rights, if you will.
Well, I think in one extreme way you can prevent this from happening is right now what's happened over the last 15, 20 years is, you know, electrical grids have become much more automated and connected to networks and essentially connected to the Internet. Theoretically, you could sort of deconnect it from the Internet and make it more manual. That's unlikely to happen because we've hit a point where everything is so networked.
Never happen.
But in a pragmatic way, I think what companies can do is there are companies out there that are called white hat hackers that you essentially pay them to see where the vulnerabilities are. And I think that more and more companies will have bigger security departments, will be experimenting with ways to, in a way, hack their own systems to see where the weakest link is. So that's something that companies can do. And I think any company is looking at their bottom line, and so it's hard to spend on extra procedures that may not have a direct, you know, impact on creating more profit. But these are important things to focus on, and I think power companies will begin to take these things more seriously.
Yeah, I think you have to, because otherwise, yeah, and I know after 9/11, like the nuclear power plants and so forth have extra security, but some places just uncovered, and it's probably a matter of time, to tell you the truth. Eric, I greatly appreciate your time. If people wanted to find out more, read more, where would they go?
We would go to internationalbusinesstimes.com or ibtimes.com.
All right. Eric Markowitz, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
It is the Steve Gruber Show on a Friday. We've got a couple of folks on the line there. Hang right there. Dennis will get to you. 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. Folks, I want to get you involved with the conversation right here on Free for All Friday.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
Get up off of that thing and dance to you.
It's been a good week here, and I appreciate all the support. Lots of phone calls this week. Your last chance to get in now, just leave it open and touch on a few more things as we head towards the exit for the week. Dennis is on the line checking in. Dennis, what is on your mind today, my friend?
Hi, Steve. A while back, about 10 minutes ago, when you described the flack between Boehner and Ted Cruz, and then you said something to the effect of Cruz explained, he says that he thinks that Boehner is frustrated because people out here are ticked off that the establishment doesn't care about what's going on. They've asked for what we built, that's not built. They've asked for slower taxes, that's not done. Nothing's done that the people want out in this country. And Cruz is criticized for being unworkable with. And then you implied, is that all? You said something like, is that all? I felt like you were implying there are other reasons. What are the other reasons that people don't like Cruz?
Why do I think people don't like Ted Cruz? I don't think people like him because I don't think he gets along with very many people, number one. Number two, when Ted Cruz talks, and I've heard this from lots of people, I'm not necessarily making this observation myself, he sounds like a weekend revival preacher under a tent when he gets into his stump speech. You know what I'm talking about, I'm sure. He gets into and you listen to Donald Trump, and he says this, and it to a lot of people, it's a turnoff. The way he gets into that, I don't know, he sounds like an evangelical preacher. The other fact of the matter is, at this point, he can't win. So it's not just that, there's a lot of people that apparently didn't find Ted Cruz being an attractive candidate. Do you agree with the evangelical weekend preacher sound?
Yeah, he does sound that way, unfortunately. But he's also talking constitutionalism, and that's what people in this country don't want because it requires responsibility. They want to sit back and get all the bennies from the Pelosi's, the Reid's, the Hillary's, and even Trump. And the interesting thing is Trump's been calling Ted a liar, liar, liar. Well, you know the old phrase, call something something often enough and people believe it. Well, who's lying about things? Trump wants to nationalize banks. He wants to, he's talked about bringing jobs back to America. Where's his clothing line made? It's made in China. Yet he's talking about bringing jobs back to America.
A lot of clothing lines are made in China.
They need to see through him.
No, that's a pretty silly thing about the clothing line. Most clothing lines aren't made in North Carolina, where textiles used to be made. You know that. But let's get back. Hold on.
He's talking about bringing jobs back to America when he's got jobs outside the country.
Let's go back to the nationalizing of banks. Wait, I've never heard anything about Donald Trump saying anything about nationalizing banks.
Oh, yeah, he has. He's talked about that. He's not a fan of the Second Amendment.
Well, I've stood 10 feet from him and watched Donald Jr. and Eric and him discuss the Second Amendment. Both Donald Jr. and Eric are lifetime members. Hold on, Dennis. Both of his sons are lifetime members of the National Rifle Association. I think the two best people to counsel Donald Trump on the Second Amendment are his two children, who are life members of the NRA. Don't you think that's important?
I don't believe Trump. If you go back and look at what he said years ago compared to now, he's just saying it now to garner votes from people. I don't trust the man at all.
And that's fair. Do you trust Hillary Clinton?
Not at all. No.
So now what are you going to do?
I'm in a quandary. I'm voting for Cruz, but if Trump and Hillary are up there, I'll probably hold my nose and vote for Trump. But I don't trust him. He's also said about executive orders. He talked about Obama's executive orders, and one of the interviewers on Fox said, "Would you admit to not ever making executive orders?" He said, "No, I'd make good executive orders."
Well, exactly. Here's the problem. Now, hear me out. See, now you're trying to blame Donald Trump for executive orders. The executive orders have gotten out of control further and further over the last many administrations. You can't hold him accountable because the system was broken when he got it. Now,
that's my biggest fear.
Hold on. My biggest fear with Donald Trump, if you want to know, is exactly that. My biggest fear of Donald Trump is that he will not respect the Constitution, that he will take what Barack Obama has done many times illegally, in my estimation, and take it to the next level, which is executive orders and everything else. But you have to believe that Hillary Clinton will do the exact same thing I do, and I find her to be a much more dangerous possibility. Go on.
I agree completely with what you just said about both issues. That's why I said it. If he is a nominee of the Republican Party, I'll hold my nose and vote for him because it might be like a case of 100% versus 98% of executive order.
The main number is he is the nominee. Ted Cruz can't win. I mean, that's it. It's over. I mean, I'm not here to support either one of these guys. You asked me what I like Ted Cruz's stand on the Constitution. I believe he is a guy who was the smartest guy to ever go to Harvard Law, according to Alan Dershowitz, a raging liberal. So I believe that Ted Cruz can win a debate. I believe that he would appoint the best possible Supreme Court justices. The problem is, at this point, it does not appear he has any path to victory except for a contested convention, and anybody that comes out of a contested convention will lose.
You're probably right. I would agree with that issue.
All right.
I just felt like, it just seems like, everybody on TV, even Fox, is all in the tank for Donald Trump.
I'm not in the tank for anybody. Let me be clear. I'm not a Republican.
I didn't say you. I said everybody on TV, especially Fox, now is in the tank for Donald Trump.
Well, don't trust TV, Dennis. Listen to radio.
I yeah, but no. I listen to you every morning, Steve.
I appreciate that. I got to run, my friend. Good conversation. I greatly appreciate it. It's Free for All Friday. That's why we do it. I wanted to have time to get Chris in. He's listening in Kalamazoo. Chris, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, my friend. What's on your mind?
So I'm like the last guy. I'm scared of Trump. And I'm not sure that I'm more scared of Trump than I am of Hillary.
Well, I am.
Kind of see them. I see them both doing the same thing.
No. Yeah. Let me help you with this, Chris. Hillary Clinton's been very clear about taking our guns away. She's made no bones about it. That's her plan. She frightens me far more. Go on.
Well, so about guns. Are we going to believe Trump right now or 5 years ago? Because, Trump has always been a liberal. He said in the past that if he was going to run, he said he was going to run for president. He said he would run on the Republican ticket because everybody will believe what he says. As long as he says what they want to hear, they'll go for it. So he's taken the lemming factor of the Republican Party and he's brought it to the end. I honestly believe that this guy is as liberal as Hillary Clinton, and that he just comes from the opposite side of it. You know, she's on the government side, he's on the pay government.
All righty. What do you think? What do you think we should talk about today? What's great about America today? How about this? How about a person? You know, and not perfect in every regard, but truly an American icon. Here's one for you, Alex. Walt Disney. Oh, come on. What are you, a Bambi hater? He lived from 1901 to 1960s. Bambi hater. Alex Clark, be ashamed. One of the 20th century's most successful entertainers, entrepreneurs, released his first animated cartoon, Steamboat Willie. You've probably seen it before. In 1928, the 8-minute black and white short featuring an effeminate mouse named Mickey was an instant success in the nation's theaters, in part thanks to one revolutionary feature. Unlike other cartoons of the 20s, Steamboat Willie had a soundtrack. Yeah, I've been to Disney World a few times. Never been to Disneyland, but Disney World a few times. Disney and Mickey's co-creator quickly produced more cartoons to fill the sudden national demand for Mickey's antics. Originally, Mickey was a somewhat mischievous character, a sort of animated Charlie Chaplin who was always getting himself into trouble, capitalizing on the mouse's great popularity. Disney also created a comic strip version of Mickey in 1930. What he did, he revolutionized entertainment in many ways. Walt Disney revolutionized entertainment. His Disney World and Disneyland, still big today. Of course, the Disney Channel. He's still here after all these years. And he captured the imagination of the American people. And he was a true American, a true believer in America. If you've ever been to Disney World or Disneyland, Main Street, America, the Wax Theater of the Presidents, Walt Disney was a true American, a true believer in all of it. And that, my friends, is the fact. I want you to have a great weekend out there. Enjoy it. The weather continues to get better as we head for our pure Michigan summer. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to have a day or two off next week, so be kind to those that are here besides me, because being friendly and gregarious and helpful to the fill-ins is also part of being a great American. It's the Steve Gruber Show on Free for All Friday. Have a great weekend, everyone.